Well, last week we left off having talked about a good bit of the theology of Sabbath. And we were ready. There's not a whole lot more to say, but we want to sum that up. We want to bring it, tie it together. And I want to give you my understanding of what the essence of the Sabbath is. And really, it's kind of one thing that has a twofold aspect, as I see it. And I'm not gonna review everything that we talked about, because we talked about a whole lot of biblical theology last week about the Sabbath. We'll mention a couple of passages that are often discussed in light of what I'm going to say now. So we need to see that. As we already saw, that we need to remember that Sabbath is tied to, in the law, it's tied to both creation and redemption. So the Exodus passage, Exodus 20, gives us a rationale for remembering the Sabbath day, that God made the heavens and the earth in 6 days. Well, as a rationale for 6 days you shall labor, and on the seventh day, rest, because of what God did in creation, working for 6 days and resting on the Sabbath. So there's a creation root. And then in Deuteronomy 5, it mentions the redemption from Egypt, for you were slaves in Egypt. And it mentions, and this is really important, because it mentions their toil as slaves, and that the Sabbath is meant to relieve that. And so you observe the Sabbath. But in Deuteronomy 5 says, as you have been commanded. So it refers back to the first giving of the law. It refers back to Exodus. And the creation account is the foundation. And that says that redemption, it plays into what we saw, that redemption in the Bible, salvation, is a recreation. It is in some sense a reinstitution of the created order. Now, what we also understand is that it is a moving forward, or even a higher state than things were at the state of creation, in the same way that our resurrection bodies are superior to Adam's body when he was created, and or will be, just as Christ's resurrection body is superior. It's a glorious body. And Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians 15. And what that says too is something very important, and that is that when God created, I think this is very important. When God created the world, He created it, and I've pointed this out several times before. He created it in anticipation of the fall. God ordained the fall. He didn't make man sin. He didn't zap him and make Adam sin. He didn't force him. He didn't have to. He knew that it would happen, and he ordained it. He intended it. Why? Because he intended redemption. He intended his addressing of a fallen state of mankind as a revelation of part of his character, as a manifestation of his glory. And he intended to do that over time, and so in a process. It's not that God created everything just like He wanted to be. It was good. It was very good. But it wasn't necessarily, maybe we could say, the best, because there was something better that He intended to do, and He intended to bring man to even a better estate. But He was going to do that going through the process of fall and redemption. And so when we think about Sabbath, we should think about man's relationship to God. That's the first aspect. Because man is, and what is that? It is that we are to image God. If we think about creation, think about, and again, this is how the first three commandments, you know, how the commandments, there's a progression. And these first three all lead to four for us. Because four begins to, they all have implications for how, what we are, how we are to relate to God. But four explicitly deals with that. And so what does creation teach us about God and man? Well, it teaches us that there's an infinite gulf between who God is and who we are. God is the creator, we're creatures. But then there's also a link because God's created us in His image. And so we can know God truly, and we are to be like God and to be light. We are to reveal, we are to manifest God's nature and to display that. And the main person who is watching the display, the main person that we are trying to please in that is God Himself. Because as God observes what He has made, His purpose is that He might delight in His own works, that He might delight in what He has done. Okay? And let's remind ourselves, this is what He's doing on the Sabbath when He rests. When He rests, what is He doing? Jesus points this out when He's disputing with the Pharisees about the Sabbath. Does God stop acting on the Sabbath? Well, no. He really, in a very real sense, He doesn't stop doing anything. He doesn't stop working in that sense. He continues to uphold everything that He's created every second. He's still doing that on the Sabbath day. So what's He doing? He's resting from His work of creation so that He might delight in the creation. Okay? And so what's our fundamental relationship? Okay, what is our fundamental relationship to God? We are not God, so we don't set the rules. We don't determine what's proper. God does. And what's proper is that we are to reflect God. We are to reflect what He does. We're to take Him into account. Okay? So the other side of that then is, what did God do? If we were imaging God, what did God do with respect to the creation? What's God's relationship with respect to the creation? Well, He's made it very good, and He delights in it. Right now, how do we image that? Well, we delight in the creation. How do we do that? Now let's remember Ecclesiastes. How do we do that? Well, we can't do it by focusing on the creation alone, can we? Because the creation alone doesn't have any meaning in and of itself. It only has meaning in reference to God. It only has meaning in relation to the purpose for which God made it, and as it reveals who God is. Now, let's just think, as part of our worldview class, we've talked about science. And we talked about what's the purpose of science? Why do we do science? And, you know, I listen to the Discovery Channel every now and then, and I hear reflections on that question. And, you know, the answers that I hear there are mostly very hollow. It's to satisfy man's insatiable curiosity about the mysteries of the, you know, what a load of, you know what? I mean, I guess it's good to be curious, but you mean I'm living for my curiosity? That gets a little bit tedious after a while. What's the real purpose of science? Why do we investigate the material world? It's to learn better who God is. Because every new thing that I learn about the creation and how it works reveals something of the wonder and the majesty of God's character and of who God is. And that's what's going to be so delightful about the new heavens and the new earth, because we'll be able to do this investigation, apart from any hindrance of sin or any rebellion in our hearts against the Creator. And we'll be able to see more things readily in terms of what this says about who God is. And we could make the whole lesson about that, because that's such a big topic. The point of Sabbath rest, then, is that in God's relationship to the world, He paused from His work of creation to delight in creation, to delight in what He's made. So as we reflect that, it's not just that we work and then rest. It's not just a sort of a mechanical pattern. It's the essence of why He did that and what He's doing that we are to imitate. And what is that? Remembering the Sabbath means remembering God. It means remembering that it's God who made these things. It is remembering that God, we work because God has called us to work. He has called us to be productive. That when we work, we are imitating Him. And He's given each one of us a calling to subdue the earth as He subdued the waters. And as he subdued the chaotic creation at the beginning and produced order and made something productive out of it, we are to do that. But we don't do that just in order to barely survive. And we don't do that in order to make the creation our goal or our idol, or as if it is God. We do it as a means to looking to God, and as a means to, in fact, enjoying God. Because we are to delight in God as we delight in what our labor produces. And we are to delight in it as a gift of God and as the blessing of God. And there's every difference between making what God gives us the thing and making the giver the thing and delighting in the giver through the means of the gift. Now, you know the difference between those two things, right? You know the difference between a Christmas day where you're just enthralled with all the stuff you've gotten and a Christmas day where you're looking at what you've given and it points you to the one who's given it and his or her love for you. And, you know, I have things to this day that in which I take great delight. And the reason that I take great delight in them is that I remember that it was a gift from my father or a gift from my mother or someone that I knew loved me. And the kind of gift they gave said something about who they were as well as who I am. This is the way we are to relate to the creation. And the reason we are is because this is how God related to the creation. And so the two things that we think about, that Sabbath should make us think about, is our relationship to God and our relationship to what He has made. He's given us a task with respect to what He's made. He's called us to work and be productive as He was, but He's called us to do that unto Him, remembering Him as we do that, because that's what gives it meaning. That's what gives it purpose. And that really is what the Sabbath is about. And when we realize that, then we begin to, a lot of the passages about the Sabbath begin to make sense. For instance, why do we worship on the Sabbath? Why is the Sabbath, in terms of the law, the day of our holy convocation, when the people of God gather officially to worship Him? Well, it's because, again, what are we doing? What are we doing with the Sabbath? We're remembering God. We're remembering that all the rest of this has to do with God. And so there's a rhythm of a week. What are we doing during the week? Well, as we're working, as we're doing our work, we should be sort of building toward and thinking about that all of this climaxes on the Sabbath. And how does it climax? It climaxes in our worship. So that when we're coming to worship, the Sabbath day, that's the climax of the week. Because that's when we think, okay, I'm not in bondage as one of God's people to my work. I'm not in bondage to the creation. I'm not a slave to sin anymore. I'm free. And let me just say, that's the reason we don't work. It's not that, oh gosh, I really need to work, but I can't because God said not to, and so I got this prohibition that's keeping me from doing what I really want to do, but I can't do it because God. No, it's like this. When I was a student, and I heard some, and I didn't hear all of this that we've been talking about, when I was a student in college, but I heard someone talk about the Sabbath, and he shared this, that this was his experience. That when he would get up when he was a student on Sunday morning, his thought was when he really began to grasp this was, oh boy, I feel so good because today I don't have to study. I get to rest from my labors, and it's not some excuse. You know, I really ought to be studying, but no. No, I ought not to be studying because God's designed it that this is the day where I get to delight in Him and delight in the purpose of the other 6 days. And it was refreshing. It was like the Sunday became the best day of the week because of that. And I remember taking that to heart and saying, okay, I'm not going to study on Sunday. And it wasn't like, oh gosh, you know, I really want to study, but I can't. It was like, wow, this really is good. Except on the occasions when somebody, you know, some thoughtless teacher, some pagan teacher, would schedule a test on Monday. And when I wasn't ready, or I didn't think I was ready. And, you know, I would think, okay, so is my ox in the ditch? And I remembered what he'd said, and I said, no, I'm not going to do it. This is a holy day. I'm going to set it apart. I'm really going to set it apart. And I'm not going to compromise the opportunity to delight in God on this day. And delight in, and think about, you know, and be free from toil. To be free from slavery to, I got to do this in order to survive. Which is what the curse was about, right? What was the curse about? It was, you still got to labor, but now the earth isn't going to yield its fruit as readily. There are going to be thorns and thistles. And you think about that phrase, by the sweat of your brow. And what the Sabbath does, particularly in its redemptive aspect, is that it frees us from the sweat of our brow. I don't have to work in order to survive anymore. Because I'm freed from, God is relieved, is relieving the curse. So, and I'll just give you my testimony. Now, it's not that I just said, okay, I don't need to study and I'm just going to go in there without studying. I did, I figured out ways to do it. I would wake up early. You know, I'd set my alarm clock early on Monday. And I'd get in a couple hours of study. That wasn't what I thought I needed. But let me just tell you my testimony. Okay? Now, this isn't something that I'm not saying. This is, I promise you, I'm prophesying. This is going to be everybody else's experience. It's nothing like that. But my testimony is, when I did that, when I was in that situation, I never made anything less than an A on the test. Never. And there were plenty of times when I would have thought, I need to study more. But I never made anything less than an A on the test. And I think God honored that. And I think that, when we come to the Sabbath, it's not then so much that we ask the question, what can't I do on the Sabbath? I think that's the wrong question. The right question is, what do I get to do on the Sabbath? And the reason it's a sign, we've asked this, why is it the sign, and why is it the sign of the Mosaic Covenant? It's because the Mosaic Covenant, and this is my answer, okay? The Mosaic Covenant is about the law. What's the law about? Well, if you read the law, we read the law every Sunday, and you've probably noticed that so many passages that we read, God says, and if you read Deuteronomy, He comes back to this again and again and again and again. So it's almost like, man, is the record skipping? You know, I got my Bible reading record on it, and Charlton Heston keeps saying the same thing over and over and over, you know. But he says, if you want to prosper in the land, when you're in the land, if you want to prosper, make sure that you obey these commandments, because that's the way you're going to be blessed. That's the way you're going to prosper in the land. And what was the, at the end of 2 Chronicles, what was the reason that they went into exile, according to 2 Chronicles? Now, Kings gives idolatry as a reason. But 2 Chronicles says it implies very strongly it's because they didn't give the land its Sabbaths. Because it wasn't just the Sabbath day in the law. There was a whole system of Sabbaths, Sabbath years, and Sabbaths of sevens of Sabbath years. And that's what the year of Jubilee was. It was the 50th year after seven sevens of years. And it was like a supreme rest. And what happened? What happened during the Sabbath year? Every Sabbath year, what was that about? Well, think about it. It was about the work of the kinsman redeemer. Slaves were freed. Debts were canceled. Inheritances were restored. What's the kinsman redeemer? What did the kinsman redeemer do? Well, he married the widow and raised up children for widows. He bought relatives who had been sold into slavery, redeemed them and freed them. He restored the inheritance thus of families. And he was the avenger of blood. The passage that Jesus reads in the synagogue in Capernaum, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me to, and he mentions all things, and each thing He mentions is one of the functions of the kinsman redeemer. Because he's our redeemer who became our kinsman, who became a human being, he became our brother, in order to perform all these functions. And there's only one that he doesn't mention, that Jesus doesn't mention, that's mentioned in that Isaiah passage. You know what it is? It's the avenger of blood to bring forth the day of vengeance, because that's postponed until his second coming. That's when, and for the Jews, A.D. 70, but they had a period of probation before that was appropriate to talk about, that before he was going to do that. But this was what Sabbath was about, because it brings all those things, death, and the need to be married, and our inheritance restored, and freedom from slavery. All of these things were things that were the result of the curse, the result of the fall. And what is Sabbath about? It's about that rest to which we are pointed in terms of where the kingdom is going and in terms of where God is taking the whole creation. And so the Israelites' entrance into Canaan is a type of that. It's the promised land. But what's the ultimate promised land? What has God promised us? He's promised us the whole world. He's promised, that's what he promised Abraham, the world, according to Paul in Romans 4:13. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. That's what we had at the beginning. That's what we get at the end. That's what Revelation says. To the one who overcomes, I will give the right to sit down with me on my throne, even as I overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. Now that, boy, that's pretty big, right? What that says is that Jesus' enthronement at the right hand of God, the main significance of that, because he was always God as the Son. So what's the significance of Christ's enthronement? He's now man as well. And in being exalted to the throne, he's restored our position. He's restored that position we lost in the fall. And what was that? As God's vice rulers, to rule over all that God has created for him as his image bearer. Okay? So Sabbath points us to our ultimate Sabbath, the ultimate eternal Sabbath, and so eschatology is bound up with it. To that ultimate eschatological Sabbath where there is no more curse. And there are no more tears. And where our ability to delight in the creation through delighting in God, where they're one and the same, the creation is a means of delighting in God, not something that draws me away from God, but the means of delighting in God. And my calling, whatever that may be, is a means of serving God and delighting in him and a more effective revelation of who God is. And now, another question is then, so why is the sign of the Mosaic Covenant? Because it's related to the law. The law is the tool of dominion. And what the Sabbath does is it gives me a proper perspective on my work and my works. And this is why in Hebrews, it's related to, and this rest is related to, and here's where Calvin was right. He just missed some of the import of this. It is related to resting from my sinful works. What are my sinful works? It's working as if I don't need God. Now, that's the easiest way to say it to me. That I can save myself. Well, trying to save myself is a futile work. I can't save myself. But is God's salvation of us, and this is why, this is one of the reasons why Sabbath is so fundamental. Is God's salvation of us completely apart from our works? Does it have nothing to do with our works? No, that's a misunderstanding. That I don't do anything. I don't do anything to cause my salvation. That's true. I can't accomplish my salvation through my works. But what does God's work in me do? It makes my works meaningful. It enables me to do the right kind of works, which are what? Works unto God. Works that are directed toward him, that are full of meaning because they're directed toward him, because he is the purpose for which everything's created. For of him and from him and unto him are all things. And that's what Sabbath's about. Sabbath reminds us of that. It reminds us every week that everything I've done throughout the whole week leads to God. And God is the end of all of that. Now, So when people say, well, but the Sabbath was an Old Testament institution. And in the New Testament, it's done away because now, you know, what it symbolized doesn't have any meaning. Well, no, it does have meaning. What I would say is it has even more meaning now. But the point is, have we reached the ultimate Sabbath rest yet? Have we gotten there? Are we in heaven? Are we at glory? And the fact that we're not means that the Sabbath is still a very important sign for us. It is still something that we need to observe because it is still a very important sign and reminder and expression of these realities if we understand it properly and if we observe it properly. It hasn't ceased to be that for us, and it won't at least until glory, until we're glorified. As long as there's still a curse, as long as we still need reminding of these things, that's why remember the Sabbath day is still so relevant for us. Now, when people say, and here's where I would, you know, take a little bit of an exception to how Westminster then applies the Sabbath, because it says we're to refrain from all our worldly employments and recreations. We're to rest from work, but I think when we include recreation in that, you know, the reason for that was it's all of the day is to be spent in worship. But I think that's a wrong conception of worship. We're supposed to worship God in everything we do, all the time. And so we refrain from work because those weekly labors that we're called can so easily become the focus and an idol and something that we view apart from reference to God. Now, we can do that with respect to recreation, too. But recreation, by its nature, is what? It's a form of recreation. And so it seems to me that that's of the very essence of what we ought to be doing in the Sabbath. Now, it's not that we do it again, if we do it, if we engage in recreation as a means of forgetting God, well, of course that's inappropriate on the Sabbath. Of course. But recreation that I do because I have time for it now, because I'm not occupied with toil, is supremely appropriate on the Sabbath. In my judgment, I think if you want to read more about that, Frame has a good section in his on the theology of the Sabbath, his chapter in Doctrine of the Christian Life on that, that I think is really good. Yes.
Someone else to have to labor, like you like shopping and go out shopping. Well, someone's having to work.
Yeah.
You need to do that, or watching a football team. Well, those people are really having to work hard.
Yes. Yeah. I'll tell you what distinctions I make in answering those questions. Because it's rest from labors. Okay. I don't want what I do to cause somebody to have to do economic activity, you know, to sell. So, I don't shop on Sunday, and I try unless it's something like if I'm sick and I need some medicine, I'll go to the drugstore and so. But we know things like that stay open. Gas stations stay open. Drugstores stay open. Somebody might need food for a reason, so grocery stores, a lot of them stay open, some don't. They didn't used to, yeah. Yeah, hospitals stay open, so works of mercy and works, you know, works of service to others. Now, when you talk about restaurants, here's how I look at that. I look at that as a work of service, because my wife doesn't have to cook dinner on Sunday because we can go out to eat. Now, I'm making someone else work. No, I'm not making them work. If I don't do it, they're still going to be doing that. And how should a Christian look at that? Well, I think a Christian should look at it like, consciously, do I want to choose to serve others in this way on that day? And if I work in a restaurant, that's how I would look at it as a Christian. I would look at it as a work of service to other people to free them from having to do that work. But I don't think all work that we would do on Sunday falls into that category. And again, what we've got to do is we got to work through these things on for ourselves. You may not agree with my take or my distinctions on a particular thing related to the Sabbath, and that's okay. The important thing is that we all work through it as best we can, conscientiously, and that we ask ourselves, am I just doing this because I just want to do it and kind of rationalizing, or am I really trying to think through this? You know. And I think we need to avoid legalism. If I've worked through this and I come to a different conclusion from someone else, I shouldn't legislate my conclusions for them, because this isn't set in stone. You know, this is my application. This is my working through things. Yeah.
Two things. We got that book. We haven't had much time to read it because it came Friday. But one of the things I read in that framework that was really meaningful to me was he talked about the Sabbath as a foretaste of what is to come and analogized it to the Lord's Supper, parallel to the Messianic banquet and the Holy Spirit as the guarantee of our ultimate spiritual condition. It was very
meaningful. Yeah. Yeah.
The other question I had was something else I read was that in the creation account, on each of the 6 days, it says there was night and there was day, the fifth day. But on the Sabbath day, on the seventh day, it doesn't say that, which speaks to its eternal.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot in there I haven't said, because obviously I can't say the content of that chapter.
And
there's
that
so much.
Also, it was just, I thought I went back and read it because I'd never noticed that before.
Right. God intends ultimately to bring us to a complete Sabbath rest. Now, again, that doesn't mean we won't be working. But what it means is that there will be this perfect integration of my labor and my relationship to the creation, and my relationship to God. So, I'm going to say, just as a summary, the Sabbath is about relationships. It's our relationship to the creation and our relationship to God, which takes its cue from God's relationship to the creation. Yeah.
When thinking about the Sabbath, for worshiping and reflecting the Creator and the creation, and ultimately the consummation of the redemption plan and those things, it brings a whole new level of meaning to me to when Jesus said, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath."
Yeah.
because he brings together the creation and the recreation.
Right.
and eternal dominion in God and man in the same. I mean, it's a big statement.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can see why, look, you can see why does the fourth commandment have this place in the Ten Commandments? Because it's the bridge between God, our relationship to God, and our relationship to the creation and our fellow man. And it's the first one. It focuses on, you know, the Sabbath is not made for man, but man, or the man is not made for the Sabbath. Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And Jesus, being Lord of the Sabbath, speaks to the lordship of God as covenant Lord. But how does he exercise that lordship? Through a representative, through a mediator, and that's mankind. So it speaks to the lordship of Christ, which speaks to man's lordship over creation under God. So all of that's bound up with it, you know, because of that fundamental, the fundamental state of affairs that God set up at creation that's restored in redemption and restores all the ways that sin messes up our work and messes up our purpose and our relationship to the creation and messes up the creation. So, yeah. God honoring the Sabbath?
He doesn't.
I don't know that God honors the Sabbath. I think
to remember the Sabbath and to keep it holy. I guess I didn't. I've never thought of God filling that role that He's asked us to do.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that. I mean. It's what God did on the Sabbath. What did He? It's
single. I've always viewed it as a single event, and God rested. I've never thought of God resting every seventh day.
Well, no, and I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that we're to rest on the Sabbath day because of what God did in the creation. Yeah. That's our role in how we relate to God, and it says something about how we relate to the creation. We don't make the creation absolute, and we avoid the way that the creation has, or the fall has affected our work, and what God has called to do in work. So it restores the proper balance in terms of what our work is about. It's to be about God. It's to be directed toward God. So there's a direction. There's a momentum in a week. And you know, I think there's a lot that has a lot to teach us about how we keep the Sabbath during the week. We anticipate the Lord's Day. And again, for us, it's the Lord's Day. Now, the whole question of, is the Lord's Day a Sabbath? Well, if you buy the view of the Sabbath that I've been teaching, then yes, it is a Sabbath. And that's the view of Westminster. And we haven't talked about different views, and we can get into them. Frame's good on this. But there's a view that says that the Sabbath was an Old Testament institution that's done away with the coming of the new covenant, and the Lord's Day is just a commemoration of the resurrection, and we worship on the Lord's Day as a matter of custom and expediency. But the Lord, we could worship any day of the week. I want to say no. There was a reason why it was the seventh day, on the Sabbath, and the Lord's Day is the Christian Sabbath. And it's changed to the first day of the week because, in recognition of that we live now in an age of fulfillment an increasing fulfillment because we live after the inauguration of the new covenant and after the work of Christ. So yes, it points to the resurrection, but the resurrection is what? It's a new beginning. It's a recreation. And so we come to the end of a week, and then what do we have? The first day of the week, which is a new beginning. So now the Lord's Day is on the first day of the week in order to commemorate that. If we say that it can be any day of the week and it doesn't matter, then we lose that significance and we lose that symbolism. And when it is significant that the early church worshiped on the first day of the week. And there's a reason why John emphasizes on the first day of the week they visit the tomb and it's empty. It's because the first day of the week is to mean something to us as a new beginning. And I might add that there was anticipation of this even in the Old Covenant, because when a new child came into the covenant, they were circumcised on what day? The eighth day, which is a new beginning. And that symbolized on the blessing side. We know circumcision could symbolize something on the cursing side too. On the blessing side, it symbolized the hope of regeneration, which Old Testament saints experience just like New Testament saints do. Yeah. Yeah, and you think about it, you know. That's why remember is the first word in the command. Remember the Sabbath day. It's easy, and that's a great point. In the hectic nature of life, it's easy to forget this. But when we remember it, it's not a burden. It's a blessing. It becomes a delight. It becomes the best day of the week. But we have to remember. And remembering the Sabbath is really a means of remembering God. That's what it is. It's our means of remembering God. And remembering that God's what life's about. My relationship to God is what life's about. Yes. 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 Yeah. And you could say, talk about, even though, you know, restaurants, I believe, it's okay to stay open on Sunday, but look at the testimony of Truett Cathy and Chick-fil-A. And, you know, and all the restaurants say, we got to stay open. You know, we're not going to make it if we don't. And they have prospered. God has blessed them, and they do better than just about, what are they now? I can't remember. They've surpassed. They're like one or two, number one or number two fast food restaurant in terms of revenue. Well, that's amazing, because they're already, if they're competing, if you're thinking about competition, they're already, you know, one day in seven, in every seven behind in terms of what they're drawing in. But it doesn't matter. So, all right, let's, oh gosh, I didn't think that was going to take the whole time. Any other questions about that? We got 45 seconds. Yeah. 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 Right. I was including that in creation, but I'm glad you made that explicit. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? I don't think it was more glorious, but I think it was as glorious. And I think that there are things. Boy, I could wax eloquent on this question. I could go on and on about this. These are things into which angels long to look. The angels, the sons of God, rejoiced. They were there when God created the earth. But redemption are things into which they long to look. And I think the reason is because none of the angels have ever experienced redemption. They've experienced creation. They've been created. They saw it. But no angel has ever received the grace of salvation. God did not become an angel. He became a man. And I think that's one of the reasons why Satan hates mankind so much. He hates mankind because mankind's the image of God, and he hates God. But he also hates mankind because, in a certain sense, God has exalted man, and that's what Satan craved, exaltation. And he didn't give it to angels, even though angels are more powerful. And I think that's one of the reasons why a satanic doctrine is that matter is evil. Because angels aren't composed of matter, and they're not material. They're purely spiritual. We're spiritual and physical. And so one of the great heresies is the heresy of Gnosticism or dualism, where spirit is good, matter is evil. And that's false. God said it was good, and God made it. And when he made it, he said it's good. And so, you know, I can see Satan. We're through. I can see Satan saying that brute matter. You know, they're this. You know, because God didn't matter either. You know, I can see Satan saying, well, I'm more like God than they are. You know, all kinds of things like that.